Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. On this week's show, we'll be talking with Andrew Mashigo, who started the Ma Mo Me Initiative, which is a project that is aimed at making art museums more accessible to the visually impaired.
After discussing that with him, at the end of the show, we'll be talking about how he uses the talking tactile pen from Touch Graphics to provide audio feedback for some of these art exhibits. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Andrew Mashigo.
If you're a vision impaired person, you're a blind person, and you've heard about a show somewhere and you want to go and see the show, put a call out to the museum and tell them you want to come and see a show. One of the things that concerns me is myself and Nancy, we've got our sight, and so we can walk into a space or gallery and see the artwork without, you know, having to inform anybody. But with the vision impaired, obviously there needs to be things put in place, officer in place to give a tour. But I find museums don't usually, they're not very proactive when it comes to creating the accessibility. So if you find that you want to see a tour, you want to see a show, you want to see an exhibition, I'll say get the phone number for the museum, call them, speak to the education department, tell them you want to see an exhibition, tell them you want a tour, tell them you want a touch tour, because it's your right to be able to view a work that any other person can engage with. And the artwork is for the whole, it's for everybody, it's for the communities, for the society. So put a call out, send an email, and if you have trouble, let me know, because I'm happy to make some noise.
And that's great advice. Nancy and I do a reasonable amount of traveling around the country, and from our experience, we've seen that even if museums and art venues don't advertise accessible art and special tours for the blind, they often do have some special programs that will accommodate you in various ways.
And one thing that Andrew kind of went over a little quickly is if you want a touch tour and that's going to require a dedicated individual from the museum to take you around, you really need to make an appointment for that ahead of time. So phone them or email them. And as he said, it's almost always somebody in the education department who's in charge of community outreach and making the art accessible to any visitor.
So calling in advance is definitely a good thing. The other thing we've found, by the way, is, again, even if they don't advertise it, if we walk up with my cane and say that one of us is visually impaired and ask about programs, they'll often give us some kind of discount. Sometimes they'll let one of us in for free, or sometimes they'll let a guide in for half price. So it's definitely worth asking.
But don't be surprised if that doesn't work either. The last museum we went to, they said, no, we don't have any policies for the people with visual impairments. And we said, okay, and paid full price. And we enjoyed the museum anyway. We've actually done two other shows on similar topics to this one. And if you want more information about accessibility of art museums, we interviewed somebody from the education department at the Rochester, New York Memorial Art Gallery. And that was in show 1140. And then on a slightly different topic, we went to Toronto and visited the Ontario Science Center and did a show on multi-sensory exhibits at science museums, and that was show number 1223.
So check those out.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Andrew Mashigo.
Andrew, can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is Andrew Mashigo. I'm an artist, and I started working with just two-dimensional paintings many years ago. But over time, I found a need to explore and express my works in three dimension. And so I started to produce three-dimensional art. I'm basically an abstract expressionist artist, so I like to share my paintings with motion and movement and a lot of what's in my heart, what's in my soul, in my spirit. I like to bring it out in color. But I found two-dimensional paintings really very restrictive, and which is why I began to explore three-dimensional works. I started to do my works now exploring ephemeral things, things that are fleeting, things that are not there for a long time. But I'm using things like wood, sand, stones, glass, and leather to produce my work. So that's essentially the background to who I am as a person and as an artist.
Many of our listeners have visual impairments. Do you?
No, I don't have what you call a visual impairment. But I do say to people that I believe that if once I wear, because I wear glasses.
Well, me too.
So I say, well, I do have an impairment. It might not be as drastic as the blind or the visually impaired people, but I do have an impairment, and I can connect with, maybe not in the same level as a blind person, but I can connect with someone who is visually impaired, because without my glasses, I can't do too much. I can move around, but I can't read, and I can't drive without my glasses. So it gives me a bit of an understanding of what an impairment can be to limiting what you want to do as a person.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the Momomi Initiative that Andrew started and runs.
So now, besides being an artist personally, you've also started and run this initiative to bring the arts to people with visual impairments. Can you talk a little bit about how you got started in that and where you developed an interest in that?
It's called Momomi Initiative. And maybe just to let you know, Momomi is actually the first two names of my three kids. So Ma is Miles Andrew, Mo is Miami O'Reilly, me is Micah Isaiah. So I put my three kids' first two names together to form Momomi. But what inspired me to do the initiative was I felt the need to explore ways of expressing visual art to the visually impaired. And one particular incident happened, think about 2008, 2009, because I work at Tate Modern part-time at International Museum and Gallery in London, Southeast London. What I do as part of my role is to support visually impaired people who come to visit the museums to see exhibitions. And I was put on call to look after a visually impaired young man of the age of, he was about 11, 12. And he had come with his college, but he was the only blind person in his school. And I was asked to look after him. And what I usually do is kind of find out what level of impairment someone has. It helps me provide a better tour. We call it a touch tour. And so I asked this young man, you know, how impaired he was. And he told me he was born blind. And usually my tours last about an hour. And halfway through the tour, he stopped me and he said to me, I can see. Now, like I said to you, before I do my tours, I always ask level of impairment. So it helps me, you know, give better directions and descriptions. And I know this boy, based on the information he gave me at the start of the tour, that he couldn't see. And he'd never seen before. But he said, I can see. And I thought maybe I'd heard wrong. So I stopped first and I said, did you? And he said, no, yeah, I can see the works. And it's left a real warm feeling in my heart to feel that I could be part of a young man's experience in connecting him with the visual world. That left a mark on me. And since then, I've actually been driven to find ways of interpreting arts. I think my biggest challenge now is not so much just the visual art, but it's the color and the art that's still a challenge for me. And my mom is helping me focus my attention on how to bring a multi-sensory experience for visually impaired people. And I believe that's essentially what started my desire to set up my mom in 2010. I'm happy where I'm at now, but I know there's a lot more I still need to do. And that's where we are at the moment.
So tell us a little bit about what Momomi does and how it interacts with museums. What has it grown into since you started this initiative?
Okay. Well, initially, Momomi was just meant to just give a platform for me to share my concerns about inaccessibility to visual art in the museums, but also to help me personally be a better facilitator for the blind and visually impaired. But also, it was also a platform to discuss visual impairment issues and also to raise awareness of these issues. That's where it started. This year particularly, I have a focus to raise more awareness. So it's more talking, it's more being seen, be more visual and visible. It's also mimicking having to do more collaborations, meeting more people, and also especially blind and visually impaired artists. That's where my focus is for 2013. And at the moment, my mom is meeting a lot of people and having these discussions that are relevant to giving the blind and visually impaired people an opportunity to see more art. One of the biggest things I found, or one of the concerns I found initially, especially this year, is the way museums and galleries make themselves accessible for people with vision impairments, especially the blind ones. I know that with art, you've got to treasure the art. The art is a heritage to keep for years, hundreds of years, and we need to put in place measures to protect the art, which means you can't touch every artwork. But I'm hoping to create a forum where we can begin to talk more with, one, with the artists who are creating the works, but also with the curators in the museums to find better ways of allowing visually impaired people to explore and engage, especially engage with the arts on show in the museums and art galleries. So that's where we are at the moment. We're doing a lot of talking and meeting a lot of people, but also exploring a lot of ways where we can, even in giving blind people an opportunity to view the arts, but to also have other ways viewing the arts, not just by touch, but also the other engaging parts, like you listen, what you hear, or even smell, or even taste, to make it a more multi-sensory, almost like a holistic approach to engaging in the artwork.
Well, it's interesting because we usually think of the arts as being mostly visual, but as you say, there are many multi-sensory aspects to art.
And sometimes you'll find a museum that has a sculpture exhibit and they'll have small models of the full-scale sculptures, so you're not actually touching the real sculpture, but you're touching a smaller version of it. And frankly, it's easier to feel or see the whole thing at a time that way too. So they do make sure to protect the artwork while they're allowing you to experience it.
Can you give some explicit examples of something you might show a blind person and how you might describe it or have the blind person come to grips with this exhibit?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. If I, let's create an environment now. So I'm talking to yourself, Pete and Nancy, and let's assume we're in a space and we have a sculpture piece. And I don't know if you know the sculpture piece, The Kiss by the artist Auguste Rodin.
I've seen some of Rodin's work and felt some of his models, but I don't know the specific piece.
All right, okay. Maybe if you can picture in your mind, it's a huge piece. It's probably 9 foot tall, 8 foot tall. It sits on a plinth about 2 feet tall. It's made of marble. Now, what I would do is to walk the participants to the artwork. In this case, we've got a huge piece with a man and a woman together. And it's very traditional artwork, very realistic artwork. So it's not conceptual. It's not cubist. It's a human being, a woman and a man sat together. What I will do is take the person to the piece of work, maybe just give them an idea of what I wanted to explore. Now, I like to be objective when I go through this process. So rather than put too many words in the participants' minds, I just give them an idea. I say, it's a marble piece. It's a sculpture piece. I could tell them the theme of the exhibition room so they have an idea of where they're at. And I'll say to them, you know, if I take your hand, your right hand, and I place it on this sculpture piece, I'd like you to give yourself some time and explore with your hands, your fingers, but then tell me what you perceive.
Presumably wearing gloves to protect the art.
Yes, maybe I should have said that. The thing about gloves, it does protect the art from the oils, which can be actually damaging to the works over time, not immediately, but over time. But then talking about gloves, if you want me to say something about gloves, there are two kinds of gloves more regularly used now. There's the polyethylene gloves, which are the plastic gloves. So it's polyethylene gloves. And they're great because you get good detail during the experience. The only concern I have with those gloves is that it doesn't allow you to breathe. It doesn't allow your hands to breathe. So you sweat. And over 20 minutes, half an hour, you'll have to take them off because you sweat. But the other gloves will be the fabric gloves, which are great in the sense that you can use them today and wash them for use tomorrow. The problem is because of the cotton fabric it's made of, it takes away a bit of the detail from your experience, your tactile experience. So that's one thing to think about when you want to explore sculptures with the gloves.
Pros and cons to every approach, I suppose.
I think so too.
When you bring the people to this piece of art, would you tell them that it's a man and woman kissing, or would you just let them investigate to try and figure that out?
A lot of times, a lot of things can determine my approach. Usually, I have an hour, so I know I have enough time to allow someone to explore. I think it's also very engaging if you let them have a play, a little bit of a play, and not put things in their minds and their thoughts. So I'd say, yeah, have a go. I'd say, give yourself a few minutes. Just have a go and tell me what you sense, what you perceive, what you feel. Now, if I can sense they are in the right direction, I allow them to carry on and I put more thoughts into their minds by the things I say. If they're going too far away, because I know I've got only 1 hour with them, I bring them back and I say to them, well, it's a man and a woman, and he's leaning and she's leaning on him. He's sitting down and you can feel the hands and the legs. And I'll tell them if it's on the right side or on the left side, and I'll tell them about colors. Usually, I like them to feel the temperature. So if it's marble, they can feel it's a lot colder than if it's bronze, it's less cold. If it's wood, it's a bit warmer. Glass is a lot colder. Then we go from there. And then when I start to build up the picture with more information, so the history of the work, then the history of the artist himself, reasons why he's made the work, I begin to pan it out a bit more, build up a bit more until we get to where they say, oh, yeah, I see what you're talking about. Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Then they begin to refer their personal experiences, which is why I find this touch tours very engaging, because people begin to say, oh, when I was in school at this time, or, oh, this thing happened to me, and then they begin to bring their personal experiences into the whole tour. And that's where you begin to find this personal engagement. So it's no more so much of you giving the history of the art, but it's you creating a platform where the art becomes something they know about, they're involved with. They can bring in stories about the bedroom or the kitchen or the living room or childhood stories. They can talk about playing with toys. And it's really very engaging, really.
Well, it sounds like an interesting balancing act. On the one hand, it sounds like you're trying to be as open as possible and let them discover everything about the art themselves, but somehow you have to guide them a bit because they can't see and they do need some cues.
That is right. I think personally, allowing them to discover really is the beauty of it, because you mentioned you use the word discover, and I think that's the word I would actually work with, because when you allow someone to discover, guided, then they're more engaged rather than if you had to feed them with so many words and so much history. And all you're doing is just being subjective rather than being aligned in an objective environment.
What are the trade-offs between giving an objectively cold description of something in terms of saying the woman's wearing a red hat, white gloves, versus giving a description of the painting that is more about what the painting's about? So for instance, this is about World War II. It's kind of gloomy. How do you make those kinds of trade-offs?
Yeah, I find, like I said earlier, I find the audio description has got great value. In a sense, it gives us the platform to share information about the content of a work, the history of a work. But I personally don't find it as engaging as a tactile tour. I've had people tell me that verbal description doesn't do it for them. They'd rather just feel the work. But like you mentioned, if you're having a talk with somebody or a group and you have to give them some history, obviously audio comes in. Now, audio description is not very fluid. It's usually the structure. So they talk about, you know, they have steps as to how to describe a piece of work. It's not like if I had to give a verbal description, which would be more fluid, I can always engage with people. I can always get things changed here and there. but audio description, I don't find it fluid enough. The benefits of the audio description first is that you get all the information you need in one pack. It could be a 5-minute recording. You get the whole information you have there. What you can do as a touch tour facilitator is to break the audio description, if it's a recorded one, break it into segments so then you can have times in between where you can make connections between the information on the audio and the actual experience on the floor or in a museum. That's how I use audio description, rather than just give it to a person and say, okay, yeah, go into the museums and you listen to this. It's not engaging enough. I don't think it's fluid enough.
Well, that sounds a lot more interesting with the back and forth, and you get the details, but you get the interpretation also.
For this week's high-tech item, we'll be talking about the Talking Tactile Pen from Touch Graphics.
So you're talking about allowing the visually impaired museum goer to get a sense of the art through touch and maybe other senses. And with sculpture, that's fairly obvious how you do it. You put on the gloves and you let them feel it. But for two-dimensional works like paintings and drawings, you've got another method for allowing the visually impaired to actually experience a two-dimensional work of art. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I can, certainly. We're trying to use technology as much as possible to help with this process of delivering a touch tool. And we have something we call the Talking Tactile Pen, TTP. I wasn't involved in the creation of this piece of work, I should say. It's by a group in Spain, originally from the States, Touch Graphics. And it's an excellent tool. I'll tell you very, very quickly about what this tool does. It helps to explore audio messages that are assigned to different parts of an image. Okay, let me talk about Mac Rothko. So if you have a painting of Mac Rothko, one of his Seagram murals, and what they do is they assign information about different parts of the painting. And with the TTP, the Talking Tactile Pen, it's probably twice the size of a regular pen, and it's got a touch mode where you can press the button and it gets the system working. It doesn't work with just any book or any platform. It needs to be one provided with the Talking Pen. And so, for example, a Mac Rothko painting would have segments to it, and each segment will carry information about, for example, a top part. So if it's a black part of the painting, they would talk about the actual color itself, or reference to what the artist was trying to explore and experience. But the beauty of the TTP is that you can explore the information, you can always go back to it, and you can also, for example, besides the text information you're reading through, you can also get information about the diagram itself. So if you press the pen on part of the painting, it tells you if it's a rounded part of the painting, it tells you the color.
Are you happy with how it works for showing artworks to people who can't otherwise see them?
I feel it's a great tool. The slight downside is, obviously, it costs a lot of money to prepare the material for use. And if you're using it for a piece of work that is not always in a museum, then it's a huge lot of expense to go through to not be able to use it as part of a touch tool. So it's always best to use it with something that is part of the museum's permanent collection. I think it makes a lot more sense that way.
What do you actually need to do to the artwork to prepare it for use with the pen?
The TTP needs to be, there's some technology to go with, obviously it's technology, but they have to prepare based on information we give them. So we talk about the work itself, the history or the content, and they can build. Usually it's coming from the other side. They do a lot of the work. This is something they've done for years, so they're used to working with this kind of platforms. All we have to do is just provide them the information and the images, and then they build the TTP around what we provide them.
So it sounds like, unfortunately, the museum employees themselves can't do this. They have to farm this out to somebody else.
And it's a very expensive venture too, yes, yeah.
Got it. Yeah, it'd be a nice thing if the museum could put in their own messages associated with each place on the piece of art you're trying to demonstrate.
You're right.
So depending on where you find yourself, if you want to experience the Talking Tactile Pen, they already have installations at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, which is in Boston, and also at the Udvar Hazy Center of the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum, which is attached to Dulles Airport outside Washington, D.C. So if you have a really long layover at Dulles, you can pop over to the Air and Space Museum and check out the talking tactile pen and how it's used at a museum.
Do you have a web address for Touch Graphics?
Yes, I do. The web address is www.touchgraphicseurope.com.
And while we're at it, what's the URL or best way to contact the MAMOMI initiative?
It will be online via www.mamomiinitiative.com.
Can you spell that?
Yes, I can. It's MAMOMIINITIAVE.
And we've learned from trying to contact you that the best way is Twitter.
The best way is Twitter.
And your Twitter handle?
Twitter handle is @MAMOMI_I.
And that's the letter I, not the organ.
The letter I.
Great.
And as usual, we'll have links to some of the previous shows that we referenced, as well as the contact information that Andrew gave, in our show notes at our webpage, www.eyesonsuccess.net.
And one more link that we're going to include in those show notes is a link to an organization called Art Beyond Sight, which is kind of an international umbrella organization for museums that are attempting to make their art accessible. And their web address is www.artbeyondsight.org, all one word. And now some final words from Andrew.
First, to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about MAMOMI and also an opportunity to talk about what I'm so passionate about. Being able to create a platform where visually impaired artists or visually impaired people can come together and work together for the sole goal or sole vision of raising awareness and creating an open environment. I found the Access Program really engaging and very rewarding, and I'm hoping that we can continue to have more collaborations with museums internationally and also artists, and so we continue to do these collaborations and hoping at some point we can have the museums open up their doors to more engaging shows, exhibitions, and collaborations.
So there's certainly no reason to be dissuaded from visiting an art museum next time the opportunity arises.
That's it for show number 1327. On next week's show, we'll be talking about the ID Mate Quest and Script Talk with Anna McClure from Envision America. The Script Talk uses RFID chips to identify what's in a prescription medication container, and the ID Mate Quest reads barcodes or custom labels for almost anything else, so that even if you can't read what's on the packaging, you can still know what's inside a container.
If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.